Welcome everyone to our Founders series, the Founders Desert Island Discs. This is going to be a series of entertaining, hopefully quite funny, but definitely informative podcasts for you to tune into at your own leisure. For us to really learn about the stories, the narratives, the dreams, the hopes, the fears, the regrets of the humans that started the businesses that we are part of and are coming together. And I think it's something that's going to be really exciting for everyone because it's such a driver of the purpose and the mission that we have all signed up to and will continue to do going forward. So I'm really grateful to Dave Allen, Matt Kingdom, Costa Papakonomou, did I even pronounce that right? That can be part of our journey today. And Mark Cohen, who are joining me here today. So I thought we'd just kick off so you can recognise everyone's voices by going round my virtual circle for everyone to just introduce themselves with their name, what business they come from, maybe in case we're in any fear what that is, and what the one word that typifies their founder journey. So Mark, I'm going to kick off with you.
Hi everyone, I'm Mark and I'm from Happn, and the word that typifies my journey is adventure.
Brilliant. Dave.
So Dave Allen, founded What If with Matt Kingdon, and the big word for me would be friendship.
Lovely. Kostas.
So my name is Kostas Papaikonomou. That's how you pronounce
Thank
it.
You.
One of the founders of Happn, and my one word would be mildly rebellious.
Oh, love it.
See what I did there?
Have they got a hyphen in between? Mildly rebellious, friendship and adventure. I'm loving this journey. Matt, give us the fourth quadrant.
Hi everyone. Matt Kingdon here. Started What If with Dave Allen. And no one's going to be surprised that my one word is exactly the same as Dave's one word. And I can prove it. I've got it written down here. Friendship.
Oh,
brilliant.
If you founded a business together. Beautiful. Okay, fantastic. Thank you so much. So I'd love to start just by really going right back to the beginning of your kind of fresh, younger selves. With the whole world ahead of you, and talk to us about really your dream for what has led to these wonderful businesses that we're part of. And so why don't we start with What If?
I can, I'll say a few words. I'm sure Dave will jump in. If I'm really honest, did we have a dream about what we wanted to do, or did we just have a kind of sense of what we wanted to fight against? I don't know. It's a really interesting question. I do know that, you know, me, like Dave, were working in big companies. It was a great company, Unilever, a really great company, lots of friends, did some amazing things. But when I was given a job to do innovation, I honestly didn't get a lot of help. And it was such a big company dedicated to doing the same thing over and over again. It just felt like, and at this time, you've got to remember, like, you know, the internet hadn't even been invented. We didn't even have mobile phones. We had to go and make phone calls from phone boxes and things like that. We had faxes and stuff like that. I mean, I was 28 or 29 and an idiot at that time, so it's a really long time ago. But I think, you know, I just think that we felt that big companies could do a lot of good in the world, and they just weren't set up to innovate and be courageous and take risks and get close to their customers and work like entrepreneurs. And so I think, without really knowing what the answer was, I think Dave and I just were in a, and I'm sorry, Dave, I'm speaking for you here, but I just think we're in a stage of our lives where we had no mortgage, no partners, no money, no nothing, nothing to lose, and everything to go for, which was, you know, wouldn't the world be a better place if all the might of all those big companies around the world could actually get better at creating new stuff that people really wanted. And I guess at the time, and even now, even more strongly, that felt like, I don't know, just at the time, it felt a great thing to do with your life, actually.
And I would say, building on Matt's point, I think the dream evolved. So I think we started with a sort of, with a friendship, with a sense of adventure, with a sense of we want to do new things in the world. And then I think over those first few years, as you began to do it, I think what we realized is the human part of that journey was often missing in large organizations, and people seem to like our humanity. So we really wanted to create a very human way of looking at business, both in terms of what we created for people, but also the environment that we created for people to be in. And I think we had a real belief that we wanted an environment where people could be the best of themselves. And then I think as that emerged and we got to work on bigger things, I think our ambitions to do more in the world grew. So I think the dream that evolved then was one of wanting to really be something and do meaningful things in the world, mixed with a place where really interesting, exciting people could do some of the best works of their lives. And I think that that sort of sense of direction, I don't know if it's a dream, but certainly a direction of travel, really evolved.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. And over to the Happen guys.
Mark, want to kick off?
Yeah, so I think it's probably worth just affirming that there were three of us at the start, and I think there were two things that probably drove us. The first was to create a values-led business, and that was really important to us in terms of just living and working in a way that felt true to who we were, but also true to what we felt our clients were looking for, or clients potentially could be looking for, because obviously we didn't have any clients. And the second was that we had a mission, which was quite a clear mission, which was to improve innovation success rates to 100%. Now, that was a lofty mission, right? And this is right around 2007, 2008. So this is layman's, the world's coming to a catastrophic collapse. No one's got any money. And you're thinking about starting an innovation business. And we didn't have any money, but like what Matt said, so there was nothing to lose on that front. But it was very much a mission-led thing that actually, if we could just help clients move the delta a couple of percentage points, it would make a difference at the time. And I think that's an important part of what has stood us in good stead and stood the relationships that we've built with clients and also with the team over the last 12 years.
Maybe to build on what Mark just said, bringing 100% success rates, I think, at least to myself, I've often translated that to, well, if we could just get one client success rate to go from 1% to 2%, hey, that's 100% improvement. Mm-hmm. That said, I mean, I guess what is also important in how we came into this, it was very much for each of us, our second, or in the case of David, even our third career. So we'd had enough time before to be severely disappointed in innovation success rates at the businesses we were working in. And really, we came together also from different functions in that sense, different backgrounds, where we saw putting those together would actually help crack that nut. What I think was still very sort of youthful of us was that the second half of our mission was also just to be famous for it. And that very much kept at least me going through those early years.
Brilliant. It's really interesting listening to you all, because there's some serious similarities around frustrations with working in big corporates and not feeling the ability to have impact, having a strong sense of mission around kind of the people's and the value side of the business, as much as the market side, and actually having some battles to fight. I mean, the biggest thing actually is, call it a dream, call it a kind of battle, call it a mission, actually that these were businesses that were launched with purpose, not a desire to make change in the world, which is kind of us as innovators, not just a kind of opportunity as it was in that moment, which is, to be honest, a lot of founder stories. And I think that's really important for all of us as we write the new chapter of kind of what's all of that going forward, which is also going on.
Can I add one thing to that, Emma, if that's okay? The other thing I noticed is that the sort of purpose that we all talked about, it wasn't made up. It was almost an undeniable truth. Like, you couldn't hold it back. Like, it was a dam going to explode one day anyway. And I just got that feeling there, which is kind of nice, isn't it?
I think everyone here knew that we were right and everyone else was wrong, which is also which is an important sort of driving force when you're trying to build something, particularly if you have no money and nothing to build from.
one little known fact, which when I share it, people go, really? So we knew each other, but we weren't friends. That wasn't the fact that we didn't like each other. We just, you know, we weren't at a friendship point at that stage. And, you know, led by David, actually, to really decode what the values mean to you, we spent 4 days with a psychotherapist in Brighton as an early team. So just the four of us as was, and some of the people who then joined us, who, you know, I was maybe a year older than you, Matt. So, and I was like, oh, this is all a bit novel. I've not done this. It's quite Brighton, that's for sure. And literally this individual, and she worked with a lot of advertising agencies, and her married name was Ruth Croddock. And she basically unpicked us, pulled us apart, and then put us all together as a team. And that as a process was incredible, absolutely incredible. And I am absolutely convinced that stood us as a business in good stead for the best part of a decade.
Amazing, Mark. And actually that leads me to my next question, which is around the values. So would you maybe just continue and talk to us a little bit about what the Happn values are, kind of what they mean to you, but maybe a little bit about what happened in a Brighton beach to get you there? Or maybe not. Maybe that's for the after hours version. Who knows?
I'll talk to two, and then maybe Costa, you talk to the other two. Yeah. I'll talk to value and enjoy, and we have four. So value really was about creating value in everything that we did. So being absolutely mindful of what we were doing and its purpose in the value that we were aiming to create for ourselves, but also for clients and for people that we work with. And we were really, we paid attention to that in the early days. And the notion of actually, that's the whole premise of innovation. I remember right in the early days, someone showed me a picture of the mayor of a cheese factory cutting a ribbon on an innovation center. And she said, that's what you guys did. You create jobs. And it's kind of, and this is in, you know, in Staffordshire somewhere. And it was like, you know, that's what we're here to do, right? We're here to create value. So I think just being anchored to that value, and the fourth value, which was a latent value, which I was quite keen to introduce, was that when you're running all over the world doing this stuff, my God, you should take the time to enjoy it. So the fourth value was enjoy, and that was really about reflecting and taking a step back and acknowledging what a wonderful job it is, and the people you meet and the stories and everything else, but just being mindful to take that time to enjoy.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, we added enjoy like 3-4 years into the journey when we were, I guess, agreeing we hadn't had enough of it yet. Needed some attention. Yeah, so the other two values, well, I guess the first one is keeping things simple. If anything, when you have a consulting role with clients, it is very easy to just fall into the pitfall of just giving more and more content, stories, and just basically fluffing everything up. And also, if you look at our end goal, which was to basically make stuff happen and get stuff to market, there is just a danger to make things way too complicated rather than just keeping to the essence of what is required to just take the next step and the next step and the next step till you're there. I think it's also like with the value focus and also the focus on enjoyment. It's one of those values that also helped us, because we need very different functions, particularly in those early days, to make this line of work. And one is, for example, just doing lots of research and analysis. And that's that's the easiest thing to get lost in and make things very complicated. So by making sure that everyone was focused on the simplicity all the way through to the end really helped. Then the fourth one is care. caring everyone we touch and everyone who is touched by Happn. And the beauty about that, I guess, and even as a non-native speaker, the word care can be interpreted in many, many different ways. It shows you care about the results of your work. And we've had comments so often where clients say, wow, it's almost like you care more about this working than we do. But it's also caring for each other inside the team, stepping in when someone needs care and needs help, but also care to our suppliers and basically the network around Happn. And that's served us very, very well, because we've had many tough times over the, 12, 13 years. And that's really when you can only reach out to friends. And the only way to have friends is to care for people around you all the way through the journey.
Wonderful. Thank you. Dave, do you want to kick us off with a couple of the what if values?
So, I mean, first one I would talk about is adventure. And it was a word that it was very interesting that Mark used at the beginning as his single word. And I think it's been at the heart of the sort of our journey, which is adventure combined with adventure is that ability to step, you know, off the beaten path and look beyond where you are today. And I think it's as an innovator, that's what you're doing. You're living at the margins, you're living at the edges. You're trying to find the new, not what exists today. And I think it's a very human value. And I think it's a value at the heart of the sort of the people we bring into the business. And I think that's been at the start and is reflected in the sort of the start of the journey Matt and I had. And then the second value I point to is passion, which is, I always remember there was a really critical moment very early in our career where we won a piece of work and the guy said, do you want to know why you won? And we take a guess at why you won. And we came up with a whole load of things like, was it our strategy? Was it our closeness to consumers? Was it the way we'd brought you these ideas? And he just laughed at us. He said, nah. We were like, oh. He said, it was the look in your eyes. He said, you were hungry. I could feel the passion. I knew that you wanted this more than anybody else. I knew that you guys were as committed to this as I am. And he said, the rest I thought you had, but he said that was the difference. So I think they're two great values, that ability to leap beyond and that ability to show a hunger and desire to really crack something, because we all know that innovation is hard, bloody work. So if you don't have that passion, you're not going to be able to do what we do. We're about bringing things into the world, and that takes passion and energy.
And you know, it's interesting as I hear you talk, because I know they're not the same and it's different flavours, but there are definitely similar spirits when you talk about passion to care. Just expect, you know, care for the work can show up as passion. And then also a little bit the adventure and enjoy. I mean, my experience with adventure is that's often the part of the role that actually are the memorable stories, the bits that you go home and talk to your family about, the bits that you want to go and brag about down the pub, and the bits that ultimately often lead you to the enjoyment of this wild, wonderful world we live in.
Yeah, and I mean, just to back that up, I remember there was a moment where we were doing a project for an underarm deodorant, and we basically spent time in a community of armpit fetishists. So I daren't describe what life they led, but all I'm saying is, it was an adventure, and we learned more about armpits in that world than we had at any other point in our life. And that included the scientists who'd spent 20 years working on armpits. So, yeah, really. Yeah, and you're right. Definitely comes with the best stories.
Matt, do you want to take us home with our last three? What if?
Yeah. Hey, I think we should mute guys when we're not speaking, because there's a lot of background noise, which is going to show up later. But so on values, just a couple of things first. One is the Happn guys, I really like your values. I think they sounded really great, actually, by the way. And then the other thing is on our values. We didn't have any values when we started the company. We just started going. And then after about 2 or 3 years, I think one of us read a book about business and it said you had to have values. So we got everyone together in the company And there are about 15 of us or something. And we said, all right, we've got to have values. And then we ended up with this really great question, which came out of nowhere. And the question was, when we're at our best, what are we doing? And then our values just popped out in probably 60 seconds or something like that. And more or less, they've stayed with us for what's very soon going to be nearly 30 years too. So it does show sometimes, doesn't it, that how you've got to frame the right question. But I suppose there are the ones that Dave didn't talk about. Impact is a value of ours. So, I mean, we've always thought that we're not a creativity company, we're an innovation company. And the difference between those things is actually impact in the world. So it's a little bit like your, Mark, your cheese factory mayor opening story. Like, what's the point of, I think, almost being on the planet if you don't feel you're contributing a bit to it, so that when you've had your time, you feel like you've moved things on a bit rather than moved things back a bit? I mean, isn't that, I just feel like if we're all able-bodied and smart people, that should be our job in life, is just to make things a bit better for ourselves and everybody else. And at work, that goes for our clients. And clearly we've got enormous leverage to help the world there. Audacity's another value. I mean, that talks to the fact that nobody joins our company because they want a normal life or an easy career. You know, they want to be stretched, and it is very stretching. You have to have a very thick skin to survive in this business, and you have to be very sensitive and empathetic at the same time. You have to be both commercial and human too, you know, and you really have to stretch and push yourself. So, you know, we have to be audacious, and that's what our clients expect from us. And the final value is love, which might be a bit like your care one that you talked about, Costas. And this doesn't mean that we're wandering around hugging each other with love. It actually sometimes looks like the opposite. Sometimes it's that we do the right thing in the long term for somebody or for a company, and that can look like very tough love in the short term.
Thank you all. I agree with you, Matt. I absolutely love the Happen values and those stories, and actually hearing them all together, I've got all the feels again. It's so lovely hearing your stories.
Progress one cheese factory at a time.
Also, I always think hearing founders talk about values, it reminds you that of the whole reason of values, that they come from within and the heart, because they are like kind of the missions that we spoke about. They are you, and they are the business at the same time. Thank you for that. Last question, actually, for this first opening episode of our series. I'd actually really love to know what your kind of Apple Macintosh garage moment was, as it were. So when was the moment, where was the moment that What If and Happen kind of first twinkled in your eye, and where did the names come from? Who would love to start?
Well, I can tell you mine, which was like a couple of days behind the original inception of the Happen ambition, which was David coming to see me in Amsterdam, traveling all the way to Amsterdam to come and ask me if I was interested in this idea of setting up a business like this. And I needed about a millisecond to say yes. And then he went back. So he traveled all the way for a conversation, which was really only a few minutes. So that's probably not the type of Macintosh garage answer you were looking for, but that was my version of it.
How did David know you, Costa?
We worked together with Mark and also a lady called Caroline in a business called Synectics, which, that's kind of how we all got to know each other.
It was the business itself was hatched at David's kitchen table, which he still has, by the way.
Yes.
Yeah, he's never got rid of it. And we played with a number of different names, and it was Caroline who actually brought it in and said, actually, what about Happen? And we thought, well, the first thing you do, right, is you look, is does the domain exist? Can we register it? And Happening World did exist. So we thought, well, okay, well, that kind of fits. And Happen and Costas became our creative director and designed the logo, and off we went. But it was hatched at a kitchen table, and basically a lot of the big decisions were made at that kitchen table, followed by a session in Brighton, and then the anchor point, because we didn't have an office for like 2 or 3 years. So it was trips to Hammersmith.
Brilliant. And is the logo the one that you now have? Is that your inception, your little circle?
Yeah, it's still the same, yeah. It's the same. No one dared to kill it.
Nice work, man of many talents. It's fabulous. Dave, Matt, tell us about your napkin, if I remember rightly.
Go for it, Matt.
Well, I think the first time I actually really met Dave and worked with him was probably a couple of years before we started the business. So I'm in my mid-20s or something like that. And we had a mutual friend who was getting married, and he asked us to be his joint best men. And so I met Dave in a pub in Islington and sort of, hello, oh, I'm Matt, who are you? I'm Dave, yeah, all right, mate, you want a pint, kind of thing. And then we wrote the speech together, which we delivered, and we just couldn't stop laughing, writing the speech and delivering the speech. I mean, we thought it was great, really great. And I think that was the start of What If, actually. It was having a really good laugh, writing a best man speech together. In fact, I think I've still got it, the notes that we made in that pub. So I must drag them out. We actually pretended that we had found the bride's diary and the groom's diary, and we recounted like what they were saying about each other as they met. We just thought it was a brilliant creative idea at the time, and it was really funny. So that's the sort of spiritual start to it. And then several years later I remember getting Dave and I had talked about starting this company. We didn't have a name. Dave can tell you about the name in a minute. But I remember getting a call from Dave one day saying, I've quit, you've got to now. And I turned around to Alice, who's a girlfriend, now wife, saying, oh shit, Dave. I always thought Dave's much braver than me. I thought, oh shit, Dave's actually quit. It's actually going to happen. Did I really mean it? That's how. And then when we actually started, we had an office in Pimlico. As I borrowed a place in a friend's building. And I remember turning up on the 28th of September, 1992, Pimlico Station Sloane Square Station, and walking to Pimlico, sitting down at this desk, like one desk we had to share. And then the first thing we did was thought, well, who do we know? Let's draw up a list of people we know and what companies. And if we phone them up, what are we going to tell them about what we're doing? So he's literally started to make it up from that moment on. It's great, great fun.
Yeah, and the name had evolved that summer. So we'd both quit, and we were actually all on a holiday with some friends. And we'd set up this evening for a brainstorm of what our name should be. But beforehand, me, Matt, and the bloke who we were best man to ended up on a balcony drinking beers and just chewing the cud. And one of the things we were talking about names, and Matt said, oh, I really love the movie If. And he was going, I think If's such a good name. And then Dave, right, our mate, went, what if? And we went, ooh. So it sort of emerged. I think it was about the third bottle of beer. And then we went down to the brainstorm and we tried to have all these other names. And about half an hour through, our mate Lar just stood up. And went, it's bloody obvious, you've decided. And we were like, what do you mean? And she goes, well, you keep saying nothing is as good as What If. And that was it. That was the name. It existed. And it was a brilliant name. I mean, it's just been, I love it as a name. I love it as a thought. And then the logo is perhaps, and the logo is worth it. 30 seconds. We basically knew this guy who'd worked with us at Unilever, and he ran a design consultancy, and we got him to work on the logo. And the long story short is he went round four different versions of the logo, all of which got progressively shitter and shitter. I mean, they were fucking awful. I mean, at the end, he had like top hats and fish in the clouds. So what if fish could fly? And we were like, oh my God, this is awful. And every time we saw him, it was another grand and a half gone. You know, we only had 20 grand and we were like at 6 grand gone with no logo, thinking we're fucked. And then at the last meeting at the end, he said, oh, we did have this one thought, and they wrote what if. And I don't know, in Spain, they put the question mark at the beginning. So he put a question mark at the beginning and an exclamation mark at the end. And then he just said, yeah, and you could sort of use this as a logo, which is our famous blib blob. And we went, thank the Lord, that's it. And the reason it's black and white is because it was cheaper, and when you photocopied it or faxed it, it works. So there you go. That was our logo.
Dave just mentioned when we started the company, I borrowed 10 grand off my dad, and Dave borrowed 10 grand off his dad. And that was our money. We had 20 grand, and that was first sort of everything. I'd be really interested to hear from the Happen guys. How did you fund and finance the start of Happen?
It's quite an amusing story about that. So we all decided to self-fund, and David, myself, Caroline and Costas were at different stages in their careers, with different you know, levels of income and savings. But fundamentally, we all agreed that we would normally put in 10k and not take a salary for a year. But the kicker, which I've managed to sell to my now wife, so she bought she could live with that. We made a load of compromises in terms of living and everything else. But the kicker was this, was that you couldn't claim any expenses on a job. So you had to live, you know, frugally, and the expenses you get back after 12 months, because we build a cash pile basically. And the first ever gig that we got, a big gig abroad, was in Russia. And Costas and I had to go to Russia, and that was an expensive place to go, so I had to get another credit card. And it was back in the day when the ruble was flying, and it was like the last days of the Roman Empire, and the client in particular was a big stain removal company, shall we say, who liked to have a good time. And the deal was this. So the first night was a pretty dodgy place, shall we say, which sold caviar and God knows what. And the second night we went out and we were taken to this nightclub that had two levels of security to get in. It was more than Heathrow. And it was like the last days of the Roman Empire in there. And the client said, you're picking up the tab on this, because I can't get this through at home. And I was thinking, I don't know how I'm going to sell this when I get back. So there was a 7 grand bar bill. and we had to do the workshop the next day. They were all hungover. And all I was thinking about was what I was going to say to my wife, because we had to get another credit card.
I love that you spent 70% of your startup capital on a bar bill for a dodgy Russian client.
Exactly. And the project
they just called the opera.
The project itself was on carpet cleaning. Anyway, that was how I funded it.
That is absolutely amazing. Well, clearly some slightly different financial standing, seeing as Happen could afford an orange a logo and a bar bill. Thank you so much, Costas, Dave, Mark and Matt. That was absolutely amazing. I feel like I've been time traveled back to kitchen tables and beaches and best man speeches. So next time, everyone, tune in for our second episode, where we'll be talking about kind of more about the experience, the best moments, weirdest moments, regrets. Check in next time.